Hi everyone, it's Luc Olivier. During the editing of this week's episode, we realized that there was a small audio problem with my track. We tried to minimize them as much as we could, and we would like to apologize for this. We hope that you'll enjoy the episode despite these issues.
This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Magnan.
And I'm Luc Olivier Dumeblay.
And our topic this week is...
We're starting a miniserie.
Oh. But before we go on and explain all that, first of all, I should wish everyone who's listening to the podcast and you a happy new year. And you too, Luc Olivier.
Thanks, you too. And to all of our listeners.
Yep. And we've got follow-up before we go into the main topic, so go ahead with that.
Yep. So, last episode, I talked about the Ford Sync of second generation that got an update months after announcing Sync 3. Which was in relation with Apple Series i3. So during the holidays break, I did the update and I can report that, yes, Series i3 is working as expected. A little side note is when I went to install the update, Ford already had a problem with the update a couple of days after releasing it. Did. And yes, you're right. Of course they did. And the side note says, we've seen that some people with iOS 9.2 and certain 2011 to 2016 Ford vehicle, without naming those, just say the range of Ford vehicle that includes Sync second generation, might have issues with Series i3 over Bluetooth. Obviously, yet again, Bluetooth problems. So their workaround while they are working with Apple is to plug in the iPhone via USB and should fix your problem. Right now, I haven't drove that much after installing the update, so I haven't had the big opportunity to test to make sure that my car isn't affected, but as far as I can see, I can press the same button to speak to the internal Ford system and just press and hold, and then after a while, it will just switch to Siri, and I can ask anything as I was doing beforehand with my phone. Speaking again with car infotainment system, this week was, or still is, CES, but at the time of this episode, release, it will be done or completed. But this week was CES, and obviously, like in the recent years, we got a couple of car infotainment news. First of all is Ford announced that Apple CarPlay will come to Sync third generation in 2017 cars. The only gotcha is Sync 3 is already in 2016's car, and they say that the update for those cars should come later in the year. So it's kind of not clear if there's an upgrade path for those cars and when it will be, but hopefully starting 2016 Ford cars with Sync, you should get CarPlay. And with older cars like mine, you'll get at least Series i3. Next, also related to Ford again, seems that those car companies wants to kind of mix the car automation with home automation, and the Verge was reporting on some kind of association or just maybe like technical demo between Ford's car and the Amazon Echo, which is kind of the Bluetooth speaker that has its own Siri in it called Alexa for Amazon. So you would be able to use Alexa and talk to her through your phone's application, through the system's car. So it's kind of strange to see, and obviously it's kind of weird association. So if you don't want to use Amazon product, it's still in the flux, to be honest. But we see that the cars are trying to evolve their infotainment system and maybe features in the car, and we'll see where it goes. That's what the CES is for.
Well, I think the feature itself is actually quite interesting because lots of smart home products are integrating with the Amazon Alexa backend. And so you could theoretically, let's say you forget to lock your door when you leave the house, you could tell your car to lock your door at home and it could do it via Amazon Alexa, which is kind of mind-blowing when you think about it.
No, it is. And we saw also an example of that with Volkswagen, but they didn't name any home automation environment. I think they were just in their own bubble thinking about it. But you're just driving and you get a notification on your phone because somebody is ringing at your door.
Yeah.
And then you have a camera, and then you see them, and you can talk to them and say, oh, I'm a little bit late. I'll be there in 5 minutes. Just wait. So all of those seems nice, but at the same time, I have a hard time trusting people that is not used to do software. But we'll see.
Yeah, I guess the thing that makes me more confident about this is that Amazon is actually a very competent web services company. And since they're mostly interfacing with the web service and not doing it themselves, that sounds pretty good to me. But we'll see, I guess.
Yep. Related to the same technology, which quote-unquote prototype app from Amazon uses, it uses the Sync app link. Ford also announced that they announced their own platform called Smart Device Link a while ago, and this one is open source, and now they are entering an agreement with Toyota. So their Smart Device Link is kind of their own version of CarPlay, so it's kind of SDK or platform where smartphone and application on smartphone are smarter about the car. So we see now that car manufacturer might share those new technologies, maybe to compete against, yes, Amazon or either Google or Apple. So we'll see how it goes for those. And lastly, in the CarPlay updates, Fiat Chrysler Automotive announced that CarPlay will be rolled out to their infotainment system. Remember, the Uconnect system was the one that got hacked recently. So hopefully this new update, including CarPlay and Android Auto, won't bring more old into their system. And that's it for follow-up.
All right.
Now on to the real topic. So for the first time in Limitless Possibility, Yannick and I decided, after an idea from me, that we wanted to do a mini-series. And the idea from the mini-series got started after our after my first impression half episode. It was supposed to be a mini topic in an episode before Christmas, but it ended up to be an half episode on my first impression of the PS4. We realized that we have tons of stuff to say about the current generation of video games consoles / platforms. So I've decided to do a mini series of 3 episodes, and the first one will be about Nintendo. During the Yannick's week, Yannick might also intertwine video games episode that might not be related directly to this current generation of video games, but also go take a look and maybe have broader subject regarding the video games. So the idea to start with Nintendo came with a Christmas anecdote that I shared with Yannick, and it's kind of the main reason why I wanted to start. I don't want to go that far on that anecdote yet, because it's going to be part of why I wanted to speak at least with about the 3DS. So now let's jump into Nintendo. So another reason why I decided to talk about Nintendo first is Nintendo was the first big company in the first three to launch their 8th generation video game console. So we'll start to talk about the 3DS, and then it will follow by the Wii U. And I tried to kind of put a format. So first of all, while speaking with a specific console, I want to go through the main event of its lifetime since its launch. Then after, Yannick and I will share the reason why we bought a console, or why, or share experiences we had with a console we don't own, because both of us don't own one of those two. And then we want to go through a list of pluses and minuses regarding each console. And then we want to end on a small conclusion regarding this console, and also give you, listener, a game recommendation. The game recommendation is more like, in our opinion, a game that you need to play on those two consoles. It might be a favorite game of ours, or just a real, like video game industry, you need to play this game. So now let's start with the 3DS.
Yay.
The 3DS was launched in North America in March 2011. And when it got launched, it had pretty poor sell in the first 6 months. I don't know if you remember this, but...
Oh, I do.
Okay, good. And they kind of did a move that Apple did when they launched the first iPhone. Like, a couple of months after the launch, they decided to lower the price and piss off tons of people, obviously. But to that day, we can see that this price lowering really helped the sales after that. Like, numbers released by Nintendo showed that lowering the price after 4 or 5 months helped the sales spike, and then really helped this console's success.
I wouldn't necessarily attribute it to the price drop, actually.
Okay, that's interesting, because I read a lot about it, and people were doing a bit of analysis on the numbers, and they were able to say that at least, maybe not its full success, but a big part of why it sell so well, but I want to come back on the so well part of selling, that it was related to mainly in the first year to that small the price decrease.
I think there's something a lot of people forget is they see the date where they dropped the price, and they also forget that the 3DS launch lineup in general was pretty crappy, like really, really, really crappy, especially for a Nintendo console. And it took them about 6 months to a year to get really like a lineup of games that it was really worth buying the system for. And as usual with most consoles, it takes about 2 years for basically a system to become recommendable to actually buy to someone, to say, yeah, there are like 5 games you should really get on the system and you should buy it now because it's been 2 years since it's been out. And I think that the first really good 3DS game started coming out around the time of the price drop, and it just coincided, and people correlate those two things, even though I think the games are more to blame than the price drop, because if the price drops but there are no good games, no one's going to buy it anyway.
No, you're right on that. And also, something I personally think that helped their sell after the price drop was that they released a new version of the console each year since the March 2011 launch. The first example of that is the 3DS XL that got launched here in August 2012. In Canada, we got the 3DS in October 2013. Like, and every year till September of 2015, like at the beginning of 2015, we got the new 3DS and 3DS XL, because in North America, we only got the new 3DS in September in an Animal Crossing bundle. But I think that doing that, especially just before the Christmas season, reminded people that the 3DS exists.
I would also like to point out that coinciding with the price drop that we got for the 3DS early on, one tiny little game launched in Japan, which basically blew up the sales of the system, and that is Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, which at the time, Monster Hunter is huge in Japan and saved the PSP from extinction. And as I mentioned on a previous episode, Nintendo grabbed an exclusive deal with Capcom to get Monster Hunter mainline series on the 3DS, and it has paid off significantly because people bought a bunch of 3DSs to play it.
Yep. Though it's not the best-selling game right now. Can you guess which one is it?
Animal Crossing?
Nope.
Really?
According to the last number we got, and the last number we got was on September 30th of this year from Nintendo, it is Pokemon X and Y. 14 million copies, according to the data we got on Wikipedia.
Oh, that's actually kind of surprising.
Now that you reminded me that Monster Hunter was really big in Japan, I'm surprised that Pokemon is. But when I saw it first during my research, I was like, oh, sure, I'm not surprised that Pokemon is.
Well, Monster Hunter wouldn't rank that high worldwide because it's not that huge in North America. Only for Ultimate, which is the last game to have come out in North America, is the only one that has really done really well in the West. And even there, it's not doing Pokemon levels of successful because it's still kind of a niche game here in North America.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at the Japanese sales charts, the things you will see in the top 3DS games are wildly different than what we see in the top charts here. In fact, that's why I'm sort of surprised Animal Crossing isn't at the top, because it was at the top of the Japanese sales for a really long time. So Yeah, that's why it's top of mind for me, because I have a Japanese 3DS, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, it might be close to Pokemon. I'm sure it did more than 5 million, because I remember it was on the top 10 on the Wikipedia page of best-selling game for the 3DS, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
So I wouldn't put it, and maybe those numbers has changed after the Christmas season. So to close the history part, right now, the last number we got said that worldwide there was 54 million units sold of 3DSs, which seems pretty big until you compare this number with the 3DS. With the DS, pardon me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're nearly as mid-cycle as the DS is. So the DS is, what, 10 years old now? The last number I was able to find is from last year, and it was introduced in 04 or 03, if I recall correctly. And the last number was from Nintendo again from last year. Same date, September 30th. And Nintendo DS sold 154 million units after 10 years. And now it's like, I remember that the 3DS is a success, but compare it to the DS, just jarring. And I got thinking about my own experience with the 3DS, and I was thinking, will Nintendo be able to attain those same numbers with the 3DS? And I'm not so sure.
Well, you say that the 3DS is mid-cycle. I actually don't believe that. I think it's dead next year.
Yeah, no, I see your point. It will be dead with the next generation. That's supposed to be like an home console portable hybrid.
Well, yeah, we might talk about this at the end, but it's unclear what the next thing is. But the rumors seem to indicate that it involves both home and handheld products in one sort of kind of thing. And if that is true, and if the other rumors that came out this week, which seem to say that the NX is going to be coming out next fall, or at least this year's fall, then by the end of the year, we should be having new Nintendo handhelds, maybe, or replacements for the 3DS. And I can bet you that within a year, all of the effort that's going into 3DS development right now is going to be going towards NX development. And there is not going to be a lot of steam left in the 3DS with regards to getting 100 million sales in the next year. It's not going to happen. But I think what's more interesting than thinking about what Nintendo can do in the future to actually get the sales numbers up is we can look at, well, why didn't the 3DS reach those sales numbers in the first place? And a big part of that is, of course, the introduction of the iPhone. And I know it's unpopular to actually call the iPhone a gaming console or a gaming system or associate it with gaming at all. But the truth is that the Nintendo DS, one of the things that was quite novel about it was this line of games called Touch Generations, which targeted non-traditional gamers. In fact, some of my grandparents actually bought DSs of their own to play some of the Brain Age games or stuff like that. There was Clubhouse games, which were basically card games and board games for DS, which were really popular. So they were making an entire line of accessible video games for non-traditional gamers and targeting it very heavily at them. And then all of a sudden, when smartphones came around, everybody is carrying a tiny pocket computer which is stronger than the 3DS in their pocket, and they have an endless supply of $1 or free games which do the job that the $30 games for this $200 system was doing in the mid-2000s. And I think that made Nintendo take a huge, huge hit from casual gamers.
No, and it is real related. Like, you just go out in public these days, and the best example of that is just go in the public transit.
Yeah, I saw it yesterday, and people were just playing Candy Crush everywhere.
Exactly. Like, it's rare to find people playing, like, NHL video games, but people playing games, card games, Brain Age style games, or even free-to-play games like Candy Crush, everybody does it. Everybody.
Yep. And that's really a part of the problem, is you can't really sell a $200 system with $30, $40 games to those people anymore, because they the job is being fulfilled by something much cheaper that they already have and that arguably does the job better. So they have no reason for it. The other thing that's also very interesting is parents that are letting their kids play iPad games. And I think that's becoming rougher and rougher as free-to-play becomes more and more dominant on iOS as a business model, because then you wind up with kids that rack up $350 bills on Smurf games for their parents, and then their parents are very, very upset, and then they say, you are never playing an iOS game, and inevitably, it's always Apple's fault. It's not the parents' fault for not configuring the parental controls correctly.
I was about to say that. Don't blame the kid, blame Apple.
Yeah. But like, that's another part of the thing is, especially here in the West, handheld consoles are a really good way to say to your kid, hey, go play this in the corner and leave me alone. And nowadays people are just doing that with iPads instead of buying an extra system, because they already have the iPad lying around the house. And I think that's giving it a huge hit, at least in the West, compared to what they used to have on the DS. So it's not easy to be in the handheld business in the West. Just for comparison's sake, it's sort of the inverse in Japan, where handhelds are doing incredibly well in Japan and home consoles are flopping completely. PS4 is like a huge joke over there compared to like the 3DS and stuff. And here it's sort of the opposite. So I don't know. Lots of interesting stuff to consider with regards to the 3DS's position in the market right now.
But that's interesting. Do you know what will be the maybe cultural differences that will relate to that? Like, it feels strange that home console is not popular when they are here. And I'm sure there's kind of reason we can find, or maybe we could not find them now, but I'm sure there's people that are looking at that to find why.
It's just salaryman culture in Japan, where you are very rarely going to be at home for times other than your sleeping time, really. You're probably eating outside of the house. You're probably working really late. So the only time you really have to unwind is your commute home on the train. And what are you going to play during that time? You're going to either play smartphone games or handheld games. And since handheld games tend to offer a higher, I don't want to say higher quality, but it's more immersive and engrossing than, let's say, Candy Crush. So those are more likely to come out during train rides than when you're waiting in line at the store, let's say.
Okay. So knowing all of the context related to the launch of the 3DS in the iPhone age, why did we buy one in the first place then? And my reason is pretty straightforward. So I bought mine pretty recently, about a year and nearly a half ago. I bought mine in August 2014, and the main reason I bought it for is the Ace Attorney series. So while I was younger, I really enjoyed the Nintendo DS, and I discovered this series. I think you helped me discover it. I think something like that. Or either people were talking about it on the internet. But it was one of my favorite games on the Nintendo DS. And I was kind of sad I was not able to play to the fifth installment. And then they got rumors about the sixth installment. And then at this point, I wanted to find a cheap way to get a 3DS. So I ended up going to the Nintendo store, which has pretty good deal if you want refurbished stuff. So they provide their own refurbished store the same way Apple does with their computers. And I was able to get, for a decent price, 3DS XL and a special edition too. So I was pretty happy about it. But I knew that I wanted to get the cheap one, at least with 3D. I wanted to experience 3D. So the 2DS was kind of a no-go. But I wanted the cheap one because I knew that I wouldn't buy that much game for it. So I wanted to keep my investment low on it. And if I recall correctly, Yannick, you bought yours pretty early in its life cycle.
I got mine around the time that the 3DS XL came out, because my original 3DS was a 3DS XL, and I've since upgraded. And the reason I got the 3DS XL in the first place was actually because my DS Lite was dying. The card slot on it was dying, so I couldn't actually play my DS games anymore. And I was going to buy a new DS, so if you're going to buy a new DS, you might as well just buy a new 3DS instead and play both DS games and 3DS games at the same time, it's not going to be that much more expensive to do it. And I ended up getting a Japanese model because I, well, first of all, being able to read Japanese or able to improve my Japanese reading by playing video games is pretty good. So I felt pretty good about that. And also because you never know, there might be that one game that never comes out here in the West that you want to play. And that game exists. It's called Cult-cept. It's the best game that you've never heard of. And they're making a second game, which is going to come out this year. And I'm really excited about that. And it's probably never going to come out in the West. So I'm feeling pretty good about my choice. And then the hinge on my new 3DS died about 2 years after that. So last year I got the... Is it last year? Or 2 years ago? 2 years ago. I got the new 3DS. XL.
Yeah, the end of 2014, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, October 2014.
Yeah. Good. So you start... We kind of have not the same experience, but I would say the kind of strange experience of buying the 3DS. Like, you bought yours because you wanted to play Nintendo games, and I bought mine for a game and possibly two, which end up being two, by the way.
Well, I didn't buy for any specific game, though I did have like one or two 3DS games that I was wanting to check out. The first 3DS specific game I got was naturally Monster Hunter 3G, because at that point I had heard that Monster Hunter was a huge deal, but I've never actually played it. And 3G had gotten relatively cheap. It just got a budget re-release because it was a couple months after the release of the game, and 4 was announced. So they wanted to milk as much money out of people as possible. So they said, okay, everyone who wanted to play the game originally has probably bought it by now, so let's make a budget re-release. So I grabbed that, and it was a pretty good experience. Unfortunately, Monster Hunter sort of falls into this weird category of games where all the platforms it's been released on have had terrible control mechanisms for the kind of game it is. Because ideally, you'd want to play on a dual stick controller, except at the time, the 3DS did not have a second stick.
You had to buy the accessory, or was the accessory not even out at this point?
The accessory was out, so the accessory in question is the Circle Pad Pro, which adds a second stick on the right side of the controls. It also makes your DS absolutely huge, especially if you're playing with an XL.
And if I recall correctly, the Circle Pad is pretty rare for the XL, too. Like, last time I checked, I was able to find one for the normal 3DS, and I can still find them in retail stores. But the one compatible for XL is pretty rare.
In the West, that's true. In Japan, that's not actually true, because it sells a ton because of Monster Hunter over there. Whereas here, nobody buys Monster Hunter, and there have been like 4 other games that use that stick. So no one's going to buy one here, so they don't even bother putting them in stores. But yeah, so you could use the Circle Pad Pro to actually add that second stick on the right. Unfortunately, I didn't have one of those, so I was playing with the right stick basically on the touchscreen. It was weird and not ergonomically that great. And one of the problems with Monster Hunter 3 is that they decided to introduce underwater battles, which introduce not only moving around, but you also have to manage your height relative to the monster, which is an absolute terrible idea because, again, the control scheme sucks. So now you just add even more nuance to the controls that are necessary, and it becomes basically unplayable. So every single water level that was necessary to beat the game, I got stuck on for weeks and weeks at a time. And that's why I still haven't beaten Monster Hunter 3G. And I'm further in the new Monster Hunter X game, Cross game that came out a month ago, than I am in 3G, which I've had for like 3 or 4 years by now. So that's kind of weird.
And now it feels strange to me that you say that, and they decided to go to the 3DS and not the Vita at this point, or they still stay with the PSP.
Yeah, well, the PSP isn't much better, because the PSP didn't have a stick either. And in fact, you had to use a weird claw position where you would use the stick that is under the D-pad to move your character forward, backward, left, and right, and then you would move the camera with the D-pad, which is on top of it. So you'd have to hold your PSP in a weird claw shape, and some people have really ruined their hands playing it for hundreds and hundreds of hours like that.
Oh my god, so you kind of end up with both ends on the same side?
No. You just have to really do a weird claw shape with your left hand to be able to hit both the D-pad and the control stick at the same time.
Wow, that's bad.
If you do play it on Vita, though, which you need to hurry up to play it on Vita because the store is going to close for PSP games in March, so you can't actually buy it after March.
In Japan only, if I recall correctly.
For now, yeah. You can just set that to the second analog stick, which is apparently the best way to play Monster Hunter ever. That's not going to happen with any of the modern titles anytime soon. But yeah, Monster Hunter was really the first 3DS game I really enjoyed. And then I guess it helps that I have logistical issues in acquiring Japanese 3DS games because it's actually pretty expensive to import them, or it was at the time. So I've had a pretty lean collection of 3DS games, and I just stock up whenever I'm in Japan and buy a bunch of used games.
Yeah, I will also say that my collection is pretty lean. Like, I'm looking at it right now, and I have 1, 2, 3 games, plus one that is a digital only.
Well, I say that my collection is pretty lean, but I have like 15 games for it.
Yeah, okay, mine is really lean then. And yeah, that was really strange because I knew that I bought the 3DS for that. Like, I bought it for Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney Dual Destinies? The fifth is Stunball. I don't remember its name. I think it's
Dual Destinies. What it's called.
Yeah. So I played all of the story. I think I haven't played the DLC yet, which I should do at some point. And then I stopped using my 3DS for a while.
Which is kind of a shame because the 3DS has such a good game lineup by now that there are a lot of games you should be playing on it.
And this is what's happening right now. Like, in the end, I decided, like, when Professor Layton versus Isani got out, I played to this game too. But in the end, in the meantime, I bought Mario Kart 7, which is pretty good, to be honest. Especially compared to Mario Kart 8, which I enjoy, but I'll have some comments about it later on. And I did buy this one and I think it's New Super Mario 3D Land.
Super Mario 3D Land, not new. Oh, new was another series.
Okay, then the one which has the same version, but it's 3D World on the Wii U.
Which is a different game actually, but yeah, it's
So it's
the best Mario game that was made since the 2D ones.
Exactly. And besides that, obviously, I'm going through Tony's catalog, which includes tons of Zelda game. The latest one I played was... I always forget its name. It's
Majora's Mask.
Yeah, Majora's Mask 3D, which I played... I think I did 2 dungeons in it and stopped playing because I don't know why. I just wanted to play another game and just stopped. So at some point in the coming weeks, I wanted to go back. But except that... I haven't played that much to the 3DS, and that was kind of expected. Like, it feels weird that, and even that, if we segue to my pluses for the 3DS, I did put great collection of game, quote, in parentheses, that I'm not
interested. You've never played them, but you've heard of it.
I've heard of them. I'm not that interested in them, but I heard it's good collection.
Yeah. I'm tempted to actually pick the 3DS up more these days because of my commute. So I commute 25 minutes both ways. So I have about like 50 minutes to kill on the bus. And usually I have a sitting spot. So I could just spend that time playing games instead of looking at Twitter, which is probably a great idea because of my terrible battery life since iOS 9, which now kills my battery as soon as I get on the bus. But that is another problem. But yeah, like there's an incredible lineup of games on the 3DS, and a lot of the games are really well tuned for pick up and play short sessions, and that's part of the reason why I love playing on handhelds over modern console games, is because I will pick up a console and say play a game for 15 minutes and then put it down and go back to whatever I was doing and do that repeatedly throughout the day. And that is much, much harder with these, I guess, more story-driven games and mission-based games these days, where you can't really do that thing. And it's also, I'm going to talk about this more on my next episode, but there's a certain luxury to being able to put in a cartridge in a console, press on a button, and start playing immediately and not have to bother with downloading updates every time or doing firmware updates to be able to play the games. Like, those things do exist on the 3DS, except they're optional, which I have much more respect for than the PS4, which, first of all, if you want to play online, you need to download all of the game's patches, which... I play a lot of Destiny, and Destiny's patches tend to be several tens of gigs, so that's not really fun. I often have to stare at a progress bar for several hours. And on top of that, you have the actual firmware updates, which are rather frequent on Sony systems and can't be done automatically in the background. So you have to actually reboot the system and wait about 5 to 10 minutes for it to actually finish the firmware update and then reboot out of that. And probably there's another game update to download when you've done rebooting after your firmware update. So it's kind of a mess on modern consoles, and you can't really do that 15-minute play session thing. Whereas if I pick up the 3DS, it is guaranteed that I can play for 15 minutes and then put it away and go back to whatever I was doing. And that's really liberating.
Though, let's be honest for a sec, and without doing a big tangent on Sony, they kind of fixed this problem, at least on the PS3, if you're a PSN subscriber. Like, I used to hit that problem. Like, I want to play the latest. I wanted to play Gran Turismo. I really, really want to play it now. And I was like, oh, it's been a while since I played, and there's an update, and it takes like 15 to 20 minutes to download it, and then 15 to 20 minutes to... And it pisses you off so much. But if you play for a PSN Plus, you can get an automatic update downloaded and installed during the night, which is pretty convenient and fixes that problem entirely.
Right. Well, I agree with that fully, except the problem is it sort of went back to the old way on PS4. And that's what I'm very confused about, is that they have this rest mode, which is supposed to continue downloading stuff in the background. But that only appears to be true if the download was started when the system was running. But if there are any updates that happen behind the scenes while it's in sleep mode, it just doesn't start downloading them until you turn on the system. So I have to turn on the system every day or so to ensure that it at least starts the downloads.
I'll have to investigate, because there was a couple of downloads when the Uncharted 4 multiplayer beta, there was at least a update per day. They were pretty short, but most of the time I just boot up the PS4 and they were already installed. It happened maybe a day or two that out of 7-8 days that I had to do the install, but they were pretty quick, so I didn't care that much.
That's strange.
So now let's go on with our list of pluses and minuses regarding the Nintendo 3DS and leave Sony aside for today. I'll start with my pluses, because I don't have that much. Like I said...
That's nice.
Yeah. And it's... You know what? Compared to... I think it will be a recurring theme for the Wii U too. Is... Let's put it in the pluses then. And I have three. You're right that those, even the Wii U is this way. Like, those consoles, you can take them, play for 15, 20 minutes if you only have this time in your certain period of day, and there will be game for you to do so. But I also want bigger story games too, so yeah, that's kind of strange. But their best advantage is there's a ton of games that you can just take 15, 20 minutes every couple of hours of your day and just play them and then put them down and come back later on, and you will still enjoy them, and there's, you're not breaking a certain flow in the game by doing so.
Well, just to make a point about that, you've played Majora's Mask on 3DS.
I did.
That game was retooled a little bit from the N64 version to actually make it more amenable to handheld play. So there's a journal in the game where certain events get logged so that you have a better idea of what you were doing and what you're headed towards. I don't want to spoil the game too much.
No, yeah, but I heard that this journal was not in originally.
Exactly. They had to add it. Well, they didn't have to, but they added it in for the 3DS version to actually make it better for that handheld play, because you're likely to actually just come back and forget where you were last time you picked up the console, and you can play for those short bursts. It makes a game that was not playable in short bursts necessarily much more playable in short bursts on a handheld format, and I appreciate that about Majora's Mask, even though I'm not a big Zelda fan and don't really like the game that much.
Yeah, and also there's kind of a, I don't remember the name of the stone, but there's kind of a deja vu stone in a way that you enter through it, and it reminds you passage that you did and places you went to go to the next dungeon, for example.
Yes.
And I think that was also added, if I'm right.
I'm not familiar enough with the original game to tell you.
Yeah, but oh well. But yeah, you're right. Those features was pretty nice. And now that I've played it, and I'm reminded that this feature was not part of the original game, I was just flabbergasted that, like, it helped me a lot to just keep on with the flow. And that's kind of my main problem with sometimes with home console games is I'll play them for a couple of days really intensively, and then I'll just stop.
I think pretty much everyone is that way, actually.
Yes and no. It feels to me that the way those story-driven games are built is you need to just play through them in a go. And the best example of that would be, for example, the last one I played that was this way was The Last of Us. Like, without spoiling The Last of Us, it feels to me that obviously the game immerses you in this world that you just want to keep playing it. That helps a lot. It becomes addictive and you want to know the rest of the story. But at the same time, I wouldn't see myself just stopping at some part and just come back later and trying to remember who's who and where I am in the storyline and blah, blah, blah. Feels kind of counterproductive and not the way you should enjoy this game to me.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Good, so next point, and I think it's my most problematic point in my pluses.
Problematic plus, that's nice.
I know. I think the 3D feature is impressive.
Well, okay, let's qualify that. It's a lot more impressive on the new 3DS than it is on the old one.
Right. But even as a technology, the way that they do the 3D is impressive. Maybe the quality of it is not that great, but the fact that you can see 3D perspective and fake those 3D without goggles is pretty impressive. And the fact that they do that on a cheap console and an underpowered console like the Nintendo 3DS is impressive to me.
Yep. I'll give them credit for coming up with something novel. I am in the minority who plays with 3D on all the time, except at the lowest setting most of the time. And I think it just has to do with the screen on the 3DS is not particularly good. And I feel that if I don't have the 3D on, I don't actually perceive the edges of objects as well as when I do have it on. So I turn it on for that reason alone. And it does a lot of... It comes in very handy for 3D games, basically.
Oh, I'm sure it does. But even with 2D games like Phoenix, right? It was pretty impressive what they were able to do. Just build perspective in those 2D objects was pretty neat while they were doing those storylines.
Yep.
But at the same time, I put it in my menaces, too. Saying that I'm not a big fan of 3D as a whole. And... I remember, we won't spoil anything, but you asked me what I thought about Star Wars, and the first thing I told you was, don't go see it in 3D. I was forced because we wanted to see in the first days of it being out, and I'm not a big fan of 3D. Like, everybody I know loved, oh my goodness, I forgot the name of this movie, Avatar, the yes. Blue thing. Everybody I knew loved it, especially for the 3D feature. And I went to the cinema, watched it, and was like, this movie is boring, especially the 3D features.
Yeah. I think that if you want a really good tech demo of what the 3D can do, the Sega 3D Classics, which are available on the eShop, are some of the best 3D games you can get. They are all technically Sega arcade games from the early 90s, so they are all featuring 2D graphics, but the perspective that they set up using the 3D layers is absolutely amazing, and it is some of the best 3D you can have on the system. And in fact, I think that while I do appreciate the 3D for its utility in 3D games to be able to tell where objects end and all that stuff, I think that where it really shines is in 2D games, like you said, because it just makes everything look nicer.
Yep. Now, in my list of minuses...
Oh, well, can I drop a plus in here?
Oh, sure. Let's do pluses first. I'm going a bit too fast.
So the plus that I have is also sort of a minus, and that is the Virtual Console on the 3DS. And I understand that the Virtual Console is also available on the Wii U. However, they are separate, which is part of my minus. There is actually a very surprising amount of old Game Boy and Game Boy Color titles which you can buy on the Virtual Console. And I think by the time this comes out, the original Pokemon games will be available as well on the Virtual Console. So you'll be able to get Pokemon Red and Blue and Yellow on the Virtual Console sometime soon. I forget exactly when.
We need to check. I forgot to check. And we need to check because I think I'll... That will be the main reason why I will use my 3DS in the coming weeks.
The amazing thing is they're actually making physical versions of those games in Japan. And you can also buy... because back in the day when the games came out in Japan, you could get translucent Game Boys, which match the color of the cartridge of the game you bought. And now they're doing this. It's the only way you can get a 2DS in Japan is they're actually releasing limited edition 2DSs that match the colors of the Pokemon games. Which you can get for that. So that's actually going to be pretty cool. If you are a fan of the weird and quirky Game Boy games that there were in the 90s, you have a huge lineup available to you, as much in the West as you do in Japan. And I think that's really nice because there's a lot of stuff in there that is incredibly hard to find these days that you can pick up for $5 now on the Virtual Console. I'm not sure where I was going with this anymore, so we're going to have to go on with your minuses.
Good. And
I'll try to think of it when I'm going to talk about the Virtual Console and the minuses, I guess.
Good. And now that you mentioned specific bundles regarding the 2DS in Japan, this reminds me that it is one of my pluses regarding especially 3DS, but they didn't do that much with the Wii U. But Nintendo has an history of doing tons of bundles with their console, and especially special edition of their console. And the main reason why I want to do, the main reason why I bought mine refurbished was because I got the Yoshi one, because I wanted a special one. I didn't want the boring one, the blue one, the red one. I was able to find one, to get one, and that's what I wanted. Compared to my recent purchase of the PS4, like, Sony are able, did that in also in the past, but at a smaller scale. Like, maybe each generation, there's maybe, what, 5 maximum? Yeah, I'm not able to go to 10. But...
Yeah, and it's, and nowadays with the PS4, it's sort of cheating because, first of all, they have, like, this removable faceplate thing, and they very rarely actually change the color of the console. It's almost always still a black or a white PS4. The notable exception is the Metal Gear Solid 5 one, which actually comes in the same colors as the original Nintendo Famicom, which is really strange. It's like this 20th anniversary Famicom colored PS4, which is apparently for Metal Gear. I'm not sure why, but every time I see that, I'm like, oh, it's the Nintendo PS4. Sony's slightly less impressive on the bundled front. I do think that limited edition bundles are slightly less important now that Nintendo 3DS faceplates are a thing.
But they're not a thing for the XL version.
They are not for the XL. And in fact, all of the limited editions that come out now in Japan are XLs by nature. But I think that if you prefer the smaller design, you can still keep it fresh and get new faceplates from time to time. And I'm probably going to get a Monster Hunter Cross faceplate because that one is really cute. And I want it on my 3DS. So that's it.
Good. So the next point on my list of minuses, I'll keep it short and keep some for the Wii U because most of them are applicable to both consoles. So I'll go through them quickly. Obviously, it's kind of part of Nintendo's DNA to just build, not underpowered, but less powerful console compared to the competition, but bring new feature. We spoke a lot about the 3D, but even then, as a whole, you see that the 3DS is underpowered compared to the technology that we have right now.
Do you know the name of that philosophy inside Nintendo?
I do not.
It's called lateral thinking with withered technology, and it was developed by Gunpei Yokoi, which is the father of the original Game Boy. And basically the idea is take old technology, put a twist on it to innovate, and release it again, and it'll be successful. And that worked up until smartphones.
No, and now we see it. We see why. And to me, like, most of the menus in 3DS are fine. The biggest place where you see it being underpowered is when you download the game from the eShop.
Yeah, I've heard a number of weird things about, like, what exactly the 3DS is doing during the eShop thing, because it's not the download that's taking forever. It's something to do with the DRM that they use, because...
Oh, really?
If you just go from the old 3DS to the new 3DS, your downloads get magically faster, and it has nothing to do with the actual networking. It has everything to do with the processor speed. So my understanding is there's something DRM-related that happens every time you download a block of a download, and that is what's causing the eShop to be eternally slow, at least with regards to downloading games and installing games. It's really unacceptable how slow the eShop is. It's part of the reason why I don't buy physical games. Why I don't buy download games. But, of course, there are other reasons, which we'll probably get into shortly.
Oh, it is the next one on my list. But also related to that, to do a test, it seems that I deleted the Phoenix Ideal Dual Destinies from my 3DS. So I went to re-download it. And I think it took 20 to 25 minutes to download a game that is, what, near about 3,000 blocks? Like, it feels to me that it shouldn't take half an hour to download a game of this size. And download and install, let's put it this way. When in 30 minutes, I can download GT6, for example. Or Gran Turismo, GTA, or any other, like, home console game that is, like, 30, 40 gig. And after 30 minutes, it is installed. Downloaded and installed.
Wow, you've got a fast connection.
Sometimes. Let's put it this way. Sometimes. And I'm sure some listener will point out when our recent episode where my Skype connection had issues. So let's put it sometimes.
All right.
Good. Next point. Questionable UX. And this is my Christmas anecdote.
Yeah, I have some more stuff to add to this, but go ahead and tell your story.
The Christmas anecdote is the following. Tony got a new 3DS. He got the new 3DS XL for Christmas. And we had to do the 3DS to new 3DS migration. And yep. He was like, oh, it's easy. You just do that. I'm like, no, you cannot do that. And that was, he told me that you can do the migration via Wi-Fi. I was like, no, you need to unscrew the back, remove the micro SD, put it in an adapter, put it in the PC. Because I remember reading a lot about it and people complaining that you had to unscrew the back because now the micro SD is hidden behind the battery door, which has a screw on it. And obviously the 3DS has a SD port and the new 3DS has a micro SD port. So you also need to buy an adapter if you don't have one of those. And then we read through the Nintendo's documentation, which has maybe 5 different pages that explain some part of the migration process on their support pages. Also, they love to tell you that during the process on both 3DSs, they love to prompt alert views in a way, like alerts with tons of text in them. And I was like, no, we need to read this. I want to know everything that this migration is doing to make sure that you don't lose anything.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt for too long, but similarly to how many of us have learned not to trust iCloud, and every time that anything regarding iCloud comes up, we read it with a magnifying glass to ensure that we don't lose all of our data.
You mean you?
Maybe. Nintendo has a similar reputation of just not getting network-related things very well, and we'll get into that later as well. But since the system transfer is sort of a network-related thing due to crazy Nintendo implementation details, you really want to make sure you read that whole thing very carefully. And from what I could hear, it was very similar with the Wii to Wii U migration in the early days.
Oh, I never did this one, though. But yeah, in the end, the last sentence was, there's three ways of doing the migration. There's one where you just put the SD card from one to another, assuming that you add the micro with an adapter from your old 3DS.
Which is highly unlikely.
Exactly. But to me, it feels the easiest one to do. And then the 2 second options depends on the size of your SD cards.
Yep.
I was like, okay. And I'm assuming that they don't want you to transfer 32 gig over Wi-Fi, which is okay, sure. I'm able to do that between computers in a reasonable amount of time, so why not?
But because it's redoing the DRM thing.
And I'm guessing that's that. And the gist of it is, if you have in your original 3DS a SD card smaller than the 4 gig one in the new 3DS, you can do it via Wi-Fi. If it's 4 gig and bigger, you need to do it via PC.
I'm not entirely sure about this. I think as long as the data you have on the SD card is less than the target SD card, it should be fine, because that's what I did.
Oh, sure. Meaning that you add a smaller...
Yeah, like if I have a 64 gig SD card in my old 3DS, but I only have under 4 gigs of data, it'll still transfer fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. But I know that there's a 4 gig limit. I don't know if it's the... Like I'm trying to explain. I don't know if it's related to the SD card of something or it's related to the data itself, because it's not clear.
It's really weird.
And I was thinking, like, you know, like, I was thinking that there's tons of kids, like 10-year-olds, that have 3DSs that yep. also have DSs, because you can do DSi to 3DS.
Yeah, though that's less problematic than this, but yeah.
Sure, but I can imagine parents trying to do so for them, because obviously they invest money because, I don't know, they wanted to buy the Phoenix Wright game that is only available on the eShop in North America.
Yeah, so about that, I've had some experience with Nintendo Account, which is the new Nintendo-related thing that does... It's their new online service that is supposed to bridge all of their systems together, because right now they're all disparate little systems in their own silos, and it's weird and confusing. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but I went to the website on the day, I think it was Christmas Day or something, because I got like a notification saying I got new coupons or whatever for the eShop. And the first thing on the front page of Nintendo Japan's website was a big, oh, Merry Christmas. Hey, new parents who are trying to transfer your 3DS or Wii U, here's all of the instructions you need, with a nice big button to go directly to them. And I thought, wow, that's really smart. They realize that they have a huge problem on their hands because it's impossible to understand what the hell is going on. So they feel compelled to put a giant button there because they know everyone's going to have tons of questions about it.
Yeah, and I just compared that to my experience and most people I know experience with iCloud backups, which most of the time, don't email me about your edge cases. I know they happen. I've seen people having issues, but like most of the time, you just enter your username and password. It redownloads your backup, redownloads all of your application, and a couple of hours later, everything is there.
Yep. I want to share my horror story, if you're done telling yours, about the system transfer.
Yep.
Okay, so the day I got my new 3DS to upgrade from my old 3DS, which the hinge was dying, but it still wasn't completely dead, so I could actually transfer the system. During the system transfer, you need to be able to connect to the internet, because it needs to talk to the eShop authentication and Nintendo Network servers to actually transfer your licenses and everything over. The problem is, it was the middle of the afternoon, and of course, in Japan, that's the middle of the night, and in the middle of the night, there is scheduled maintenance, and scheduled maintenance means you can't transfer your 3DS, and you can't finish transferring your 3DS if it started before the maintenance was happening, until after the maintenance. Now, how long was this maintenance? It was 6 hours long. So I sat there with an unworking 3DS for 6 hours. And the problem is, the error message didn't actually say it was in maintenance and that I would have to wait until the end. It just said unknown error occurred. And the only reason I knew that it was in maintenance is because I went to some random Nintendo status webpage that told me that the eShop was down. And nobody would know this because, first of all, it wasn't actually linked anywhere. Like, at least when Sony is down, like, they have a big thing that says, like, oh, we're sorry, we're down for the 15th time this week on their front page.
And there's people complaining everywhere on the internet.
Yeah, everywhere on Twitter. Like, everybody's talking about it because it happens, like, 15 times a week. But Nintendo's eShop maintenance is buried in, like, I had to search for basically like half an hour to find a status page that said, oh yeah, by the way, we have maintenance, and oh yeah, by the way, I guess this means the system transfers won't actually complete. So I had a very stressful 6 hours of wondering if I had a dead 3DS or if maintenance would magically make my thing happen. And the other thing, of course, is because it failed midway through the transfer, I was afraid that I had just screwed completely everything in the transfer and that I would basically be incapable of finishing the transfer. And luckily that was not the case, but it made me hate Nintendo system transfer bullshit so much, and I hope I never have to do it again.
But I'm surprised that it says unknown error, because Nintendo is known for their weird error code that you have to Google and all of that shit.
Yeah, but the code itself was like unknown error. That's a problem.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, now that you speak about network functionality, my last minuses is questionable network functionalities.
Oh my god, where do we start?
Yeah, I don't know where to start. Maybe where I will start is the fact that the downloads, or a big example of that, which is related to the eShop, is that the buying process is tied to the console, not to your unknown Nintendo account, which half exists until Nintendo account.
Yeah, so yeah, as you said, the purchases you make on the eShop are tied to the serial number of your device, which means if you have a Nintendo device, either a 3DS or a Wii U, you should probably note down your serial number in case it gets stolen or lost, because that is the only way you can transfer your licenses over to a new system, by contacting Nintendo. If it actually gets stolen, you will have to give them a police report saying that it was actually stolen. So I would recommend lying and saying that it broke.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
Yes. Nintendo account is a thing that exists. It exists only in Japan right now. I have one. Well, first of all, I remember tweeting out to a couple of people who were interested in hearing about Nintendo account saying, I'm incredibly surprised that it took me 30 seconds to set up my Nintendo account and there was no bullshit involved. And the reason for this is I basically migrated my Nintendo Network ID into a Nintendo account. It's still kind of confusing when you go to log in, because right now, because they're sort of in between systems, you have the choice between logging in via social networks, which includes Nintendo Network, or logging in with your email and password. But the Nintendo Network account isn't considered the same as your Nintendo account, so you have to select Nintendo Network. You can't just type your email and password into the Nintendo account login form. It's very weird. But aside from that, I have no problem with it. And what appears to be very interesting is everyone has a notification inbox now, which is global across Nintendo products, which means if you have any games that are of interest to you on 3DS and you mark them as such either on the website or, I believe, technically things that use SpotPass are automatically linked to this, but I'm not entirely sure, you will get notifications regarding the games you own, basically, directly on the website in a notification drawer. And you are eligible to get coupons that are exclusive to you or to some condition you met directly in there, which you can use on the eShop, which is now available via the web on Nintendo account right now, which is quite interesting. So previously, I think this only has happened in Japan in the past, but I'll give you guys a taste of this. When there was a sale on the eShop, which was limited to certain people, what happened is you got a new app that showed up on your 3DS called New Nintendo 3DS Special Offers. And you opened that app and you got a second eShop that was exclusive to you with only the games that are on sale in it.
Really? Wow, I've heard of that. But it automatically appears and disappears.
You get a notification on your 3DS, basically, that says, oh, you're eligible for a sale. And then you press on a button and it shows up as a present icon in your home screen. And you just tap on that and you get access to this second mysterious sale eShop. And this, I think, has only happened once. And it was a welcome sale for new 3DS owners shortly after the launch of the new 3DS. And I think this has only happened in Japan. Now they don't need to do that anymore. Now they can just send you the offer directly to your Nintendo account, and it shows up in your notifications, system-wide, account-wide notifications thing. And you can just click it there, and you can go see a list of all of the offers you're eligible for in your profile page. And I think that part is really well done. It's also really well done that you can buy everything from the eShop directly through the web, and the interface isn't terrible, which is surprising. And it will automatically download on your device if it's online.
Wow.
Which is also sweet.
Finally.
Yeah. It's so... Well, I mean, this is normal because it's been on Xbox Live and on PS3 for ages now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Finally. But it
feels like Nintendo is doing modern gaming networking stuff, which is super surprising. The one part which is completely unknown right now is Nintendo account has, for now, nothing to do with online multiplayer at all, and it is not visible on your devices at all. It is entirely web right now. So until there is a 3DS system update, and until there is a Wii U system update, none of the improvements that have been made to the Nintendo Network stack as part of Nintendo account will be visible on those devices. And it's unclear if it'll ever happen. That's sort of like the problem is Nintendo has said nothing about how this is going to integrate into the consoles themselves. And that's worrisome. I have zero hope that this will actually manifest itself in any way for online network, online multiplayer related stuff. Like, I don't think you'll be able to ditch friend codes on 3DS, which is unfortunate. But at the same time, if they're killing the 3DS this year, I guess it's not that bad. But it's still kind of unfortunate.
But it does feel like it will come in the next generation, and that's it.
Yeah, definitely. And the rumors we keep hearing about why they don't improve the online multiplayer stuff is because it's just baked into how the APIs work for online multiplayer, and they couldn't just fix it without requiring updates for every single game that has been released up to now, which is unfortunate. But I hope at least, I am confident from what I've played with of Nintendo account that the next console will be better, but I'm not sure how much better yet. One last thing in the networking station section, I have to give a hat tip to the developers of Mario Kart 7 for doing one feature that I absolutely love that has never been done in any other multiplayer game on the 3DS, and I don't understand why. So Mario Kart 7 has something called communities. You can create a room for your website or your Twitter friends or whatever, and you have a code for that room, and then you can share that code on social media, and anyone can join it. It doesn't have to be reciprocal, so you don't have to both add yourselves. So you can just post that thing, and people can play with you immediately. And I believe if you own the same game, you can join the room that your friend is playing in directly from the friend screen, which... Again, Xbox 360, this was the big feature of the Xbox 360, but like Mario Kart 7 is the only game that has this feature, and I don't understand why it's the only one.
Because I'm guessing that it needs to be implemented by the developer of the game and not by Nintendo itself.
Yeah, but guess what? Nintendo made Mario Kart 7. They also make other games for the 3DS.
I know.
It's very strange.
Why
doesn't Smash have this? Smash is like the ideal game for this, and it doesn't have it.
You're totally right.
And also, that join the game in progress thing has to be built into the OS because it's in the friends list thing. It's not in the game's friend list because the game doesn't have its internal friend list. It's in the OS friend list. So they have this feature here, join the game that my friend is playing in progress, that is baked into the OS and it's used by one game. I don't understand.
Okay, now I better understand. Okay, why you're pissed about it. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a plus because it's a really cool feature. The problem is it's only in one game and every game should have this.
It's a tiny plus with a big minus.
It's like, you tried. Okay, we can move on to the next thing now. I'm done ranting about networking.
Good. Do you have any other minuses? For the Nintendo 3DS.
Just to go on about the Virtual Console a little bit, because I said I was going to elaborate on it.
Do you want to keep that for the Wii U section then?
No, because it's specific to 3DS.
Good.
The Virtual Console on 3DS has not been updated for over a year. in either region. I'm not joking. The last game that was added to the Virtual Console on 3DS, before Pokemon, if it's out by the time this comes out, was Pokemon Trading Card Game. This was released at Christmas, not last year, but the year before that.
2014?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was the last game, and before that, it goes to March 2014, the last game that was added to Virtual Console 3DS. So I'm not sure what's going on there. The other thing is...
But I thought you said the Virtual Console was good earlier in this episode.
Oh, it's good because the games that are in there are good. The problem is there should be more, They shouldn't have stopped in March 2014. And the other thing I want to add is... it's unacceptable that Game Boy Advance games and DS games are on the Wii U and not available on the 3DS Virtual Console, where you could play them on the go, where they were originally intended to be played. And this is especially a big fuck you to everyone who owns a new 3DS, because it has the Super Nintendo, well, the Super Famicom colored buttons, ABXY buttons, and surprise, you can't actually play Super Nintendo games on that. Or you can't play the GBA games that are ports of the Super Nintendo games. So it's like, everyone thought that the Super Famicom colored ABXY buttons on the console was a sure thing, that within a couple months we'd have Super Nintendo or GBA games, and still nothing. They're only on the Wii U, and that's really disappointing, because I don't want to play Metroid Fusion on a fucking TV. I want to play it on a handheld. Thank you. Mic drop.
Good. This means I'm sure that you're done with minuses.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, sure. Good. So let's do conclusion on a Nintendo 3DS, and then we'll move on to the Wii U. You know what? I don't have a conclusion for the Nintendo 3DS. And I think it's just related to my own experience with it, meaning that I buy it to play specific game. I played those games. I feel that even if the acquisition cost per game is pretty high, since I bought two games for it, but I don't mind. It's just like, I wanted to play some games, I have a neutral opinion about it, and that's it.
Okay, my opinion is slightly different. Mine is, I find it unfortunate that the 3DS is the console that won the handheld wars. I understand, to a certain degree, why it did. Because it's cheaper to develop 3DS games because it's not capable of very good quality, very good graphics quality or anything like that. You have to actually work much harder to develop assets for a higher resolution game like you do on the Vita. And at the end of the day, yeah. And at the end, what matters is gameplay, not graphics. I get all of that. The problem is your games look pathetic in 2015 and 2016. And your competition doesn't look pathetic, except they just don't have any games, which is sort of a problem. And I think there are a lot of people, specifically in the Monster Hunter community, that every single forum thread about Monster Hunter is, wow, it sure is disappointing that this game came out on 3DS instead of a system where it could actually look good. And I think that's sort of the recurring theme for a lot of third-party 3DS games. I don't think any of us actually expects Nintendo to make first-party games for the PlayStation Vita anytime soon. So it's very technically disappointing as a system, especially with the online stuff too, but the games are there, so I own it, and I play them, and I deal with the fact that it's on the underpowered console that I don't really want those games to be on, but they're good games, so I deal with it. And that's sort of my review of the Nintendo 3DS.
No, and I understand your point totally. Like, since we're the last two owners of PlayStation Vitas in North America or something, but it feels to me that I have a stronger connection with the Vita compared to 3DS, but it doesn't seem this way for you. It seems that you're like, I really, really, really enjoy the game that there's on the 3DS, but I wish they were on Vita. And I'm like, there are two games that I like on the 3DS, so I don't care that much if the 3DS is the winner, quote-unquote, of this generation for handheld devices.
Let me end this with a damning point about the 3DS, and that is Monster Hunter Cross came out last month, and at its core, it's basically a best-of Monster Hunter game. I've written quite a bit about it on my blog, which I'll link in the show notes. But basically, this new game is we're taking a bunch of the bosses that you've enjoyed from the previous games and we're putting them in this new game, but then we're revamping the mechanics significantly. So you can now experiment with these new mechanics on the bosses you know and love, which makes the game incredibly awesome. The problem is, this is a 3DS game that was released in 2015, and they brought back a bunch of bosses from the PSP versions, and they just basically copied and pasted the PSP assets into the 3DS game. And that's all I'm going to say.
Good. Now let's move on to the Nintendo Wii U.
Yep.
Good. So, I got reminded that the Nintendo Wii U was launched just a year after the 3DS. The 3DS got launched in March 2011, and the Wii U got launched in November 2012. And now I realized that the Wii U is really old.
Is it really that old? Because I was talking to someone on New Year's Day. I was chatting with a friend of mine on the phone, and I was saying, NX is coming out this year. It's going to be awesome. And she was like, what? NX is coming out this year, but the Wii U came out in 2012. It's like not even 4 years old. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it's not that long ago.
And yeah, but at the same time, it feels like a long time ago because of the like great success that the Wii U is, right? Right? Right?
It feels like a really long time because there have been no games for it. Speaking of no games, the PlayStation Vita also came out that year.
Okay. Let's keep Sony products for a later episode. But yeah, like we were hinting, the Wii U hasn't been a great success.
No, it hasn't. And I think that similarly to something like Windows Phone, it's not necessarily because it's a bad product.
Oh, you're totally right. You're kind of stealing my thunder, but that's fine.
Whoops, sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. But yeah, totally right. And you know what? I really like this example is, in a way, I wish the Wii, I wish we hadn't had the Wii and only had the Wii U.
Oh, same. Definitely.
Because we would have about the same numbers. And imagine having the Wii U in 2004, 5, if I remember. Yeah, 2005. Maybe they could have created the Wii with the gamepad, but without HD. But I think HD is a big selling point for the Wii U. But before I talk about the buying experience, let's just go through the short history of the Wii U. Launched in November 2012. In the first 6 months, again, it took a year. So they were having two editions of the console. They had the white one that was 8 gig of internal storage. That was the Wii U. And there was the premium or deluxe bundle. The name changed from regions. But the deluxe bundle was black Wii U with 32 gig of internal storage. They came with mostly the same hardware, just that the color and the internal storage changed. And after maybe 6 months, they decided to stop selling the cheap one, quote unquote, and just keep the 32 gig model and the black one. And like we said, it haven't sold that well. Just comparing the console sold since September 30th, 10.7 million units. Let's just go through the Wii U numbers. As of same date, 101 million units. So 10 times less console. And I know that you're a big fan of the GameCube, but if we compare the number of consoles sold currently with the Wii U with the number of GameCubes sold, the GameCube did better.
Yeah, and I think...
But the GameCube wasn't that great success, too.
Yeah, well, actually, what I was going to say is that the Wii U feels like the logical successor of the GameCube to me in many ways. Whoa. Because I feel like a lot of the spirit that was present in the GameCube games that Nintendo put out are also present in the Wii U. The unfortunate problem is that Nintendo basically has no third-party support at all, and that means that you are looking at a game library that is almost entirely Nintendo games. And if Nintendo games are not all you want from a console, it becomes sort of hard to justify buying the Wii U for those reasons. And I think that's part of the reason of why so few people have picked one up.
But that would be, personally, that would be my main reason why buying one.
Because it has all the Nintendo games?
Yes. And only
that's those also ones. A great plus.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And only those. And with the Wii U, we got nice new IPs. And now that we segue into the buying / experience, I don't have a Wii U and neither do you.
Nope. I think I thought about it.
You thought a lot. And I think we both of our Wii U experience is with the same console, right?
Like pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think
actually, I have a little more, but...
So you did experience the Wii U without using Tony's console, because Tony, my yes. boyfriend, bought one, which I'm always make fun of him by because he bought one, but he really, really enjoys it. And now that he owns it, I'm like, sure, like, that's a good console. And the main reason of that is all of those Nintendo's IP. I played a lot of Mario Kart 8, which I like, but don't enjoy that much because there's too much accessories / carts. I just want carts. Okay, people? I just want carts. Four wheel that stays on the ground, no reverse, four wheel, a cart, that's it. Bananas, that's fine. I don't care. But I don't want flying machines or motorcycles. Carts. It's called Mario Kart. Carts.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
Good. So, Mario Kart is the great. It's a really great game, and it is the best-selling game of the console, which is really funny because half of the console sold, people that bought them also bought Mario Kart 8.
Which isn't that surprising to me, actually.
No, it's not surprising, but just to give you the tiny scale that the Wii U is, like 10.7 million units and nearly 6 million games were sold. Like it's 5.87. So it's like one console every two consoles got it. And you're right, it's not surprising because it's a good game and everybody knows about Mario Kart because it's a long-standing IP.
Yeah, like if you had to ask me like which Wii U games are selling the most, having more of a penetration rate with Wii U owners, I'd either say Mario Kart or Smash, but I guess Mario Kart wins because there's a less of a barrier to entry to that than to Smash.
No, sure. And I think it's a general appeal will make it sell more compared to Smash.
Yeah, and it's just more accessible to families and whatnot than just some game where you beat up other people.
Yep. And the other game I played, Super Mario World, 3D World, and the Year of Luigi version, which is kind of really, really, really hard. I know it's...
Now you're mixing two things up. There's Super Mario 3D World, which is the one that's like the one on the 3DS.
Yes.
And there's New Super Mario Bros. U, which also has a DLC called Super Luigi U, which I believe was also distributed as a standalone game in certain cases.
It was a standalone game here, and I'm sorry for my mistake, because what happened is Tony bought the new Super Mario Wii U, the Luigi version, first, and then realized that it was hard as fuck, and bought the Mario edition after.
Yeah,
but yeah, and the other ones are all Nintendo IPs. Zelda, Iris Warrior, Splatoon. I think we need to talk about Splatoon.
Yeah. But that's a plus by itself.
It is a plus by itself. And except that, I don't have that much to say about my experience with the Wii. It's just, if you enjoy Nintendo IP, that's it. Don't think that 3D third-party developers will do software for it. They won't. But Nintendo will.
Well, what I think is actually kind of interesting and might be even more interesting going forward for the NX is the presence of Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U. Bayonetta was an Xbox 360 game, which eventually got a terrible, terrible PS3 port, and I guess now has a Wii U port because it comes with Bayonetta 2. The sales of that game were not great. But there are a ton of fans of it, and that's sort of what's strange about this game, is I don't understand how, but okay.
What kind of game is it?
It's sort of like Devil May Cry, except with a really pretty lady instead.
Oh, okay.
Nintendo basically funded the development of Bayonetta 2, because Sega didn't want to fund it themselves. And that is sort of what they've been trying to do, to try and draw hardcore gamers into the Wii U is when the Wii U was announced, controversially, they said, this isn't like the Wii. We're trying to appeal to both casual gamers and hardcore gamers. And I think that for hardcore gamers, the Wii U is a much, much more palatable system than the Wii was, definitely. But there's still a lack, especially due to the lack of third-party support, a lack of games that really scream hardcore gamer. And I think that Bayonetta 2 was sort of their effort to try and get that to happen. Except then Bayonetta 2 didn't really sell very well, unsurprisingly, because Bayonetta didn't sell very well. And then they had this survey for Smash Brothers where they asked people to vote for their favorite characters from video games that they wanted included in Smash. And the number one winner was Bayonetta. So now Bayonetta's in Smash, except I'm going to laugh so hard if the DLC for Bayonetta doesn't sell very well either, because it's going to be like three things in a row that are Bayonetta related. Tons of Bayonetta fans, but no one buys the games. It's very strange.
The Bayonetta community is pretty vocal, but there are like two.
Yeah, that's also possible. So I guess people just find her really sexy, I guess.
No, but I think it's touching a point that the marketing regarding the Wii U wasn't that great. Like, at first, people were thinking that the Wii U was the gamepad, and the gamepad was kind of an accessory for the Wii, but then now there's a Wii U that does HD, so how can they do HD with the gamepad? And then you realize, oh no, it's a new console.
Yeah, because the messaging was just bad there, and I think they should have just gotten away from the Wii naming, because in many ways it lacks a lot of the things that made the Wii accessible and palatable to casual people, and so I don't think they should necessarily be drawn in under that premise and then find out that it's basically just another game console except it has a screen.
Yeah, but it still support those like motion controllers, but Nintendo wants developers to use the gamepad, but the gamepad is not...
The Wii and the Wii U also support the GameCube controller, and they don't call their fucking console the GameCube 2.
And the Wii U supports the GameCube controller, but that's another story.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I
think that's also another problem with sort of the Wii U is that, like, if for two consoles now, they've been supporting the GameCube controller because it's like they don't want to admit that their new controller designs aren't as good as the GameCube one. Like, that sort of... There's something a little weird about that.
Yeah. I think the best way to put it is they know they are able to create successes, but they don't know what's the secret sauce. So... They had, like, great consoles. Like, if we go back in the past, they had a great console with the first NES and SNES. And then they got the N64 out, which was an okay success. It was good, but not as great as the two old console. And then the GameCube kind of flopped. And then they decided to use the Metroid you mentioned earlier and say, hey, we'll make the Wii U, use all hardware, but motion controllers.
You said Wii U, but you meant the original Wii.
Yeah, pardon me. Oh my goodness. I think it's...
See, that's part of the problem.
Yes, first. And I think it's becoming a recurring theme that I misname everything on this podcast.
Yes.
So, especially video game consoles. But I meant the Wii, and you're totally right. And they kind of find the secret sauce for this one. They're like, yes, motion controllers. And then they didn't know how to change the recipe and make it better.
The Wii U is a DS for your television, literally. That is what it is. The problem is, especially since higher resolution game screens on handhelds have become more possible, a lot of people doubt that the DS as a concept really has a point beyond some of the novel games, gimmicky games that there were on the original DS. Because, like, if you have a high resolution screen, you can actually put a mini map directly on the screen and it won't cover the entire game because you actually have the pixels to display it. And like, I think that a lot of the elements that were demoted to being on the second screen can be on the main screen now if it's a little bigger, see the PlayStation Vita, and if that screen is a touch screen. And then the entire idea of having a DS sort of goes away. The issue for that, of course, is that you're not going to do that with a TV because your TV isn't a touchscreen, and you'd look stupid if you actually tried to touch your TV screen.
Don't give ideas to Samsung.
It probably already exists. But I think the Wii U is just proof that Nintendo hasn't figured out what to do with the gamepad. Because the biggest example of this is Star Fox Zero. So Star Fox has been at the last two E3s, I think. I think the first E3 it was shown at, it was behind closed doors only. And then last year, 2015, it was available for all to play, and all did play it, and all agreed that it was terrible because it tried to force you to use the gamepad. Except the problem is, if you actually go and listen to Shigeru Miyamoto's main motivation for making the Star Fox games, well, not the Star Fox games, but the Star Fox game on the Wii U and other games that he announced alongside it at that first E3 it was shown at, they have a team inside of Nintendo that their entire point is, yeah, try and find a point for the gamepad because we haven't figured it out yet, when they should have been thinking about this before the console even shipped.
Yeah, it feels to me that the hardware team was like, we have a way to beam high-quality video and input back and forth from a gamepad to the console, and we have the technology to do it cheaply now. So let's do it.
Yeah. And that's what I think. I think certain games get less credit than they should for their use of the gamepad. For example, Splatoon, when you're playing multiplayer online, you can warp to any destination where another player on your team is standing by just tapping their icon on the minimap, which can be incredibly useful. And I don't see how else you could do it than by having a touchscreen on the gamepad. But those kinds of useful uses of the gamepad are so, so rare. And in every other case, it just becomes a dumb screen that you don't really need because you're not playing on a low-resolution handheld like you were back in the original DS days. You're playing on an HDTV where you can actually put a minimap on the screen and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I think the, if we segue to the my pluses, the gamepad wireless performance, and especially the quote-unquote remote play feature where you can just play a game on the gamepad, is my biggest plus.
It's awesome.
It is, like, amazing.
And unlike remote play, it works most of the time, actually all of the time, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And these, especially over Christmas, I was not in town in Montreal. I was just away from my apartment where my PS4 is. So I tried to play FPS games remotely with the Vita, and it's working, but the lack of the missing buttons compared on the Vita compared to a PS4 game controller makes it really weird. On the other side, with the Wii U, the gamepad is a controller, so it has all of the same buttons as a Wii U controller, because it is a Wii U controller. So the games are properly configured to use it as best as it can. So this remote play feature just becomes way more better. You can play all types of game on it.
And what a lot of people have found out, and this sort of ties in into my next episode, is the input lag that you have between the actual gamepad and, I guess the gamepad controls and the gamepad screen is less than most televisions introduce with image processing that happens between the Wii U and your television. So you might actually be more responsive playing directly on the gamepad than if you were playing on your television in certain cases.
And the range is pretty great. And you know what? I haven't seen drop frame when the gamepad or the console itself detects that it's about to drop frame. It just says move closer and you're about to go out of range. It will stop the game and just does it stop the game? I know it just showed a big warning to, and it doesn't give you the experience of I will drop a couple of frames and then I'll complain. It's just like, I'm complaining now, do something, because it's so optimized to be fast and performant that it needs to be in range most of the time.
Yeah.
And we mentioned it a lot. One of the pluses for the Wii U is its great catalog of Nintendo IPs. We got a lot of... in the recent month, we got Splatoon. We got the Captain Toad game. We got the Yoshi game. Like, all of those games looks amazing because, A, they are in 3D. So, finally, we also have an 8G console from Nintendo. But the downside is most of them are the same type of game. They are platformers because Nintendo is good at platformers. So yes, if you want to play other types of game, you kind of can't because there's no 3D third-party games because most of Nintendo games are platformers.
Yeah, there is an overwhelming amount of 2D platformers on the Wii U, which is kind of surprising. But that's what's there. You've got Mario Maker, you've got Yoshi's Woolly World, you've got technically Super Mario 3D World is 3D, but a lot of people who love the 2D ones love it. I know I do. There's the shitty new Super Mario Brothers U, which I despise because I hate that series.
Wasn't that bad, to be honest.
I guess.
Okay, you said I guess. Yes!
Super Luigi U is better, even though it's harder. It's better designed.
Okay.
Yeah, so there was a lot of platforming happening on the Wii U. I guess the big plus for me, and this is also a minus because it's part of the reason why I don't buy it, is if you have anyone over for local multiplayer, the Wii U is the console for you. I mean, all of the good local multiplayer games are on the Wii U, and there are basically almost no local multiplayer games on any of the other two consoles right now. So that is a big plus for Nintendo. They own the couch multiplayer, and there is a lot of interesting stuff that I would love to play with other people, except I either don't know anyone with a Wii U or I don't have friends. So that is a sort of a problem. And if I actually did have friends around the area that actually came over or something like that, I would be much more tempted to actually buy a Wii U than I currently am. For now, it's just, well, I'm not really missing out on anything on the Wii U because everything I want to play is single player or Splatoon. And I think when I played 6 hours of Splatoon in a row at your at Tony's place last summer, I sort of played enough Splatoon for a while, and I am just fine right now by not playing Splatoon, and I'm more fulfilled by stuff like Destiny, which there are a lot of parallels between last year's Destiny and Splatoon that I think have gone unnoticed in the gaming press and is actually kind of surprising.
Yeah, and this brings me that I want to revisit Splatoon a bit. I had tried the single player mode a bit, which is kind of a small story mode that was, let's be honest, boring.
No, you are not going to get away with that.
What?
Splatoon single player is some of the best platforming action that Nintendo has put out on consoles in years.
Then this means I need to complete it because the first world, quote unquote, was just meh.
Yeah, but that's because it's like tutorial levels. But I would like to say it's easy to dismiss Splatoon's single player mode as being just some dumb shit. It's actually really cleverly put together and has a lot of interesting mechanics that you cannot find elsewhere in the game because they're only in the story mode because they don't make sense in multiplayer necessarily. And I think you're a fan of the Super Mario Galaxy games, right?
Wouldn't say a fan, but I did enjoy playing the first one. I didn't think they
bought the second one. You always shit on me when I say that I don't like them. I thought you were a fan. Okay. I think there are a lot of elements in there that you would enjoy as a fan of Galaxy. And I think that it's actually delivered in a way that is more palatable to people who didn't like Galaxy like me. So it's very interesting platforming action. You just have to actually believe that it's going to be good and go in with that attitude. And another note, because I forgot to mention it in follow-up because I'm dumb. Right now, it is the Games Done Quick marathon on Twitch. As we speak, they are playing some version of Mega Man. But the very, very first run that opened the marathon on last Sunday was a Splatoon speedrun, where they played the entire single-player platform campaign in, I believe it was an hour or something, a little under an hour. And if you're not going to play a Splatoon single player, you should at least go watch the speedrun because you'll get to see all the crazy mechanics you were dismissing as being just some lazy single player campaign that they put into the game so that they don't sell a game that only has an online mode.
Okay, maybe to just like excuse myself. I will say that at that time when I played it, it was when the game got released. Like, everybody was just referring to the multiplayer mode. And it felt that when you go to the single player mode, it was just sadly boring. So I don't think I was in a state of mind, I would say, to enjoy it more than the multiplayer.
That's fair. I could also add a link into the description for in the show notes for some guy playing an entire level of the Splatoon campaign with his ass. That is a thing. Yes, there is a guy who played an entire level of the Splatoon single player campaign with his butt on the gamepad. And you can go watch it on a Japanese streaming site.
I'm not sure that I want to watch that.
I unfortunately watched the entire thing. It was 18 minutes long and it took forever. But he beat it.
Good. I don't know where to go with that. So. Okay. Did you have any pluses to add?
Virtual console is good on Wii U, except for the NES one. Don't deal with the NES one, but all the other ones are good.
Good. The last minuses, if we go to the minuses, the only one that is related to the Wii U by itself that I have, I mentioned underpowered and giving some kind of example related that compared to the competition again, it's like last gen hardware, but we talked about that. Also about the network functionalities. The one specific for the Wii U is the biggest downside of the gamepad. It's battery life.
Oh, yeah. I completely forgot about that.
And you know what? It is really like you're really enjoying this remote play or you're just playing because somebody's watching the TV. And then you just end up after a couple of times of it being just telling you you need to charge me after 3 hours of playing. You just end up playing with it plugged in to the wall. And that's
it. Yeah. And here's the strange thing is... it's bigger than the 3DS. It's bigger than the 3DS XL. It does less than the 3DS XL because it doesn't actually do anything. It's just a dumb screen. Except somehow it has less battery life than even the small 3DS. And you're like, how is this possible? And then you open the actual slot where the battery is. And you're like, oh, I understand now because it's like... it's like this tiny little cube of a battery, and then there's this huge empty space, and you're like, oh, okay. And I guess we should mention that there is a first-party extended battery you can buy for it.
Which is just crazy, to be honest.
Which will fill up more of that space with battery. And I guess the trade-off that they made is they wanted the gamepad to be light, so they didn't want to put as much battery in it. And some people have been going back and forth about... whether the battery life or the weight should have been the priority, and that is a fine debate to have. At the end of the day, it's just sort of strange.
No, it's either you get used for it to be plugged in, or you just buy this add-on battery, which feels to me that should be the default battery, especially because the case fits for it. Like, they designed the case for it to fit.
Yeah.
Which is the part that pisses me off the most.
Yep.
But yeah, if we want to end that Wii U conversation, I think you should buy a Wii U if you're a big Nintendo fan. And it is the console to buy, even if it's about to die. I think it might be even a better time to buy it when the next console gets announced, because everybody will want to ditch their Wii U, so you'll be able to get the cheap one with a great collection of games.
Yeah, that's... more or less what I'm considering to do, because it's so late right now that I might as well just wait it out even more.
Yeah, the only problem might be like multiplayer online games.
But there's just Splatoon, and yes. There's probably going to be Splatoon 2 on the NX, like either at launch or very shortly after there, because they have to be thinking about how big Splatoon was. And if they make a sequel, automatically they will sell a bunch of systems.
I think it will be either in the launch games or like in the first 6 months on the new console.
Yeah. Wii U, if you have a girlfriend or if you have friends, you should probably buy one. Or little kids. It's also really great for that. If you are like me and you are a single person who is not doing much and wants to play more games with guns or whatever, you probably shouldn't buy it. Although I have heard great recommendations from Call of Duty fans who play Call of Duty on the gamepad, because again, since it has basically no lag, it is the closest thing you can get to handheld Call of Duty.
Wow.
And you can play it on an airplane if you actually bring your Wii U onto the plane and plug it in. You can play Call of Duty on a, quote, handheld that is being powered by a power source.
Wait. People did that?
Oh, yeah. There are a bunch of people who actually bring their Wii Us on planes and plug it into the plane power and then play on the gamepad in the plane.
You know what?
I
seriously don't know if it's genius or really stupid.
I mean, I was kind of tempted to buy one to do that, too, so...
Yeah, like, I'm just flabbergasted. I seriously don't know if it's, like, really genius or really stupid, but oh well.
Yeah, we should probably end this thing.
Yep. Do you have a Wii U game recommendation before we end it?
Super Mario 3D World. It's the best Mario on a console. Well, first of all, it is the only 3D Mario game I would call good on a console since Super Mario 64. Fight me. So you should probably go buy that.
I won't fight you for your love of Super Mario 64. So,
oh, fuck that game.
Good. My recommendation is Splatoon if you already have one or planning to buy one now. If you want to do what I'm suggesting in the conclusion, I would say that either Yannick's recommendation or Mario Kart 8 is the way to go.
And if you want a cheap Wii U, either go get one used or go to the refurb store and buy one for $200.
Oh, wow. They're cheap.
Well, that's US dollars.
Oh, okay. But I'm sure I should look at the refurb store. Not that I want to buy one, but I should look.
Yep. So that's all for this week. You can find the show notes for this episode at limitlesspossibility.net/31, or you can find all of our episodes at limitlesspossibility.net. The podcast is on Twitter at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. I am at Sakurina on Twitter. That's SAKURINA. And Luc Olivier is at
Luconouche, LUCCONOUCHE.
And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.